Welcome to Contagion Connect. In this episode, we'll bring you a voice from Nanjing, China. Seth Berg is an American physics teacher who has been living in the city since August. He'll give us his unique insight on life under quarantine there, not only as an American, but as someone with the life experience to compare the interruption to society with New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina.
My name is Seth Berg. I am a physics teacher out here in China. I'm in Nanjing, which is kind of, it's in between Wuhan, where this whole thing started, and Shanghai. I'm about six-ish hour drive east of Wuhan. And yeah, I've always kind of wanted to teach abroad. I never got to study abroad. And so an opportunity arose and I jumped on it. So I've been here since August, since early August.
Great. What was it like when the virus broke out?
It was kind of weird because this happened right around kind of the spring festival, which is like a really big celebration over here. And so a lot of people were like traveling and going abroad or going home to see families. And so there was just like a lot of people all doing all sorts of stuff. And that made kind of as the virus spread, it just made it really weird because it was like basically imagine having this outbreak during the middle of like Christmas or Thanksgiving. It would just make things kind of weird. And to top it all off, when this started, I actually came down with pink eye at the same time. So I was sick for a completely different reason while this began. So that didn't help at the start. I remember that a lot of people at first were kind of like, oh, this is mildly concerning. And then all of a sudden it blew up. And so basically went from 0 to 100 really, really quickly.
And so could you go in a bit more about how that reaction changed over time, the people around you, and how were government measures as they ramped up communicated?
Sure. So at the start, the government actually was trying to like downplay everything. It's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just, you know, some sickness somewhere. It's not that big a deal. And there were several doctors I remember who were speaking out about it. And then once it started to get bigger and bigger, the government kind of flipped its script. It was like, you know, we are going full force on this. Anyone who would even attempts to hide this, I think the line was, will be nailed to the pillar of shame for all eternity, was the rough translation I heard. But you did have a decent number of people who were pointing out like, yeah, but only a week ago you were trying to hide this. And then what really sparked flames was one of the doctors who raised the initial alarm about this, and I feel bad, I can't remember his name, ended up actually dying from the virus. And that caused a lot of hoopla among some people that I'm friends with. They're like, you know, this is basically, you're trying to save face and you're putting people's lives at risk, kind of thing. And the government's response in terms of communicating it they've been pretty good about like saying what's happening overall, because there's like different messaging apps that everyone's kind of almost automatically signed into, and they've been posting updates. They'll post out like English versions and Chinese versions. And if they do post an only Chinese version, they'll ask people like, hey, if you know any expats, please help them with this, translate this for them. So in terms of getting the word out there, once they decided that they wanted to get the word out there, they were pretty good about it. The messaging has also been kind of inconsistent at times, and a lot of it seems like they're doing things to just seem like they're doing things, if that makes sense. There's been a lot of measures that have been taken that aren't necessarily going to actually help things, but they can point to me like, look at all of the things we're doing. Now again, some of the stuff has been helpful, and I think in Nanjing this past at least week, if not week and a half, there have been no new reported cases. So I think in the end we got there, but a lot of it did seem to kind of be for show.
You mentioned some of your friends being upset. Are these all fellow people in the international program, or have you noticed some concerns or legitimacy hits that the local or national government has taken with Chinese nationals as well?
Well, I mean, my kind of my expat friends, you know, my coworkers from abroad, they kind of, knew what was going on with me. So they were kind of like, yeah, this seems par for the course. And at the time when this kind of first started breaking, that was when kind of the biggest quarantine section happened. Like to put in perspective, Nanjing is on par with the population of New York City, I think. And when I would go to get groceries, it would be empty. Like there would just be no one on the street. And that was kind of when that big spark hit. And so I didn't actually get the chance to interact with a ton of my my local and Chinese friends. The two or three that I did seemed to be either actively upset by it, like, you know, we can see what you're doing, this isn't cool, or kind of like, I see what's going on, but like, I'm not gonna raise a big fuss about it. I have yet to meet anyone who was like, oh boy, the government handled this perfectly. but again, my sample size is somewhat limited. So,
right. You mentioned the grocery store, just going to the grocery store. So you're the only person there. What's that like? What's that procedure that gets you there?
So, in order to even leave my apartment, you know, you got to have a surgical mask on. Everyone has masks on. Also, in order to leave the apartment about a week or two in, you actually had to have a card issued by the apartment complex saying that you live there. Like you had to, or you had to carry like your lease agreement with you to basically show like, I live here, I'm not just visiting. That was the only way to actually get back on into the area. So I had to have that on me. Then I'd go to the grocery store itself, and they have basically someone at the door with one of those like laser thermometers, and they would scan you, and you had to like pass a certain threshold, and if not, they wouldn't let you in. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, I don't scan well on these things. Like when they scan my forehead or my my like arm or whatever, they get an error message, and so I end up like doing like a Superman, like pulling down my shirt, and like they scan my chest, and that works. So like I have to do that every single time I want to go get groceries. So that's been an interesting interaction. And then yeah, you can just walk in and. Besides that, it's like normal, except everyone's wearing masks and there's not a lot of people there. I know that back in the States, the big runs have been on things like toilet paper and like bottled water and stuff like that. Over here, the big thing has been just fresh produce. So like, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables just get like wiped out. Like the moment word gets out that a store has like resupplied that stuff, it's just a swarm and then disappears again. And the only other thing that seems to take a hit every now and again is the instant dumplings. Actually, I went to a supermarket once and normally there's a whole aisle and it was just completely empty. So that was where I was like, oh, this is a problem. That was the moment for me.
What's any other specific restrictions you've been under in your daily life and how are you sort of adapting to those? I mean, who are you conversing with to keep busy? Is it mostly people online? Do you have people in person to talk to?
Right. So the big thing recently has been just learning. Because again, I'm a teacher. And so trying to have classes, we were originally supposed to, you know, this happened during like kind of our Christmas break, quote unquote. And so we were supposed to be back in like mid-January, and it's now, you know, March, and we're still not back. And one of the things that has made this difficult is the government has kind of kept pushing back when we would be able to come back. At first, it was beginning of February, then it was middle of February, and now, in theory, we're going back next week, but that might change. Some places are April. And one of the things that is unfortunate about living in China is their internet isn't amazing. And so when the entire country tries to get on to have school, that's been kind of an interesting thing. We've had to try several different things just to communicate with kids and talking with kids because, you know, there's a lot of social pressure on these students to do well academically. And so the pressure to, you know, not fall behind, to not, you know, get lost in your studies, but then you have some kids who like took a family vacation to Thailand and just haven't been able to come back because all their flights got canceled. So that's been kind of a weird interaction. In terms of actually interacting with people, for the first, I'd say 3 weeks, there really wasn't any. everyone just kind of stayed home. Like I'm at work now, they've opened back up the school now, but at the start, like you couldn't come into the school, even if you were just by yourself. You couldn't hang out in public places, like restaurants and bars were closed. Malls were closed. It was pretty much a full shutdown. And so there wasn't really a lot of interaction with anyone. And so a lot of Netflix binging and stuff like that. At one point, I got bored and pretended that my suitcase was trying to kill me. And so I gave it like knives and posed it around my apartment because that was what I thought was funny at the time. So
that's getting to some Castaway Tom Hanks level stuff.
Oh yeah. We definitely had some flirtations with cabin fever. I'm not gonna lie.
That's to be expected. Totally understandable. So are you allowed to leave the country right now? If you were say a couple weeks ago, would you have been able to go? Or
yes and no. It's been kind of weird because I actually had some faculty members who were like, since we're going to be teaching digitally anyway, we're going to be out for a few weeks, let's actually just take a vacation. So I have a few friends who like went to, I think someone to Thailand, someone to Japan, which then got weird because Japan started getting infected. And so the trick isn't leaving the country. Like China doesn't care if you leave. The trick is coming back because a lot of flights are just straight up being canceled, and a lot of flights that are happening are kind of going through areas that have been hit somewhat heavily by the quarantine by the virus, right? Which makes sense. If these are the main entries and exits to and from China, they're going to have the most infections after China. And so officially, am I allowed to leave the country? Yes. And like, depending on where I end up, I might have to go into a quarantine, but the trick is getting back in. So I know we have several teachers who are trying to come back and they're going to be going into a 2-week quarantine just because they have to. Like they're not, like there's some, even some apartments will not let people back into their own apartments. Like, no, you have to like be in a hotel for 2 weeks. We're not risking infecting the apartment. Cause I had several, Chinese coworkers who went home for, the spring festival and were not allowed back to their house because they had been away, and the landlord was like, we're not taking any chances. Sorry, you live here, but you can't come back.
So I imagine this might be more concentrated in Wuhan, where the health system was more burdened. I'd be curious what the burden looked like where you are. But do you feel like the quarantine put you at greater risk in any sort of way?
Not really. I feel like I don't feel like the risk was elevated. I do think that some of the measures taken were a bit more for show. So they just like, they didn't swing the needle either way. And so, yeah, I guess the short answer is not really. I know that the local hospital nearby for a while shut down for, only coronavirus cases, basically like nothing else. We're not doing anything else right now. And then, they later kind of opened it up to like other cases, but you know, like the serious stuff. I had actually had some work that I had planned to get done in the hospital that has been postponed because they're like, we're open, but we're dealing with other stuff right now. And so that's the only way, or the only case I can really think of this kind of actively inhibiting my health, was medical resources are basically just being all focused on the coronavirus and then other like extreme immediate pressing medical concerns.
Is there anything people can sort of do to be supportive if they know someone in your situation? And what have you been doing to kind of keep your mental health in as good a place as you can?
I mean, I've kind of been lucky that my school, my work here has been kind of sending out regular messages, keeping communication open. And some of the messages have been like, hey, here are some things you can do if you're feeling stressed or if you're feeling some anxiety here. It's weird. There's in a lot of cases, there's not a ton you can do besides just kind of ride it out. Because again, since it has this kind of incubation period of you can have it but not show symptoms of 2 weeks, there's just kind of this built-in buffer for anything anyone wants to do of a fortnight. And so there's really not much you can do besides just keeping that contact open, keeping that communication open. So I've been able to talk with friends from home and talk with family from home and converse with them. And that has helped, just knowing that there are people thinking about you and knowing that there are people who have you in mind. Because it is kind of surreal to basically have society just kind of turn off for a month and a half. And that's basically what it felt like. It was when I was younger, I was in New Orleans for Katrina. And it was very, very, it had a similar feeling to that, where like people were trying to go about their lives as normally as they could based on the circumstances. But just because of those circumstances, it was just inherently difficult and weird. And after a month or so of that, it can start to get disconcerting. And so I would say, if you know someone who's kind of in that position, just trying to kind of send out those lifelines of normalcy as much as you can, just for them to have something to recognize and be like, yeah, this...
So you compared and contrasted a bit there. You were living in New Orleans during Katrina.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you see as similar or different about that kind of experience and this kind of experience?
The similarity is kind of what I alluded to just there, right? That we kind of have this system that we almost kind of get complacent with and used to, just like, this is how the world works. We all kind of hum along and do our own thing and society goes X, Y, and Z. And when you have this major thing that just throws this wrench into everything, it just really kind of throws you for a loop. You know, I remember, you know, moving around a lot from like Alabama to Florida to like upstate Louisiana. I had a lot of friends that like went out to Texas for a month or two. And so just like being stranded and being kind of up in the air and not really knowing what's going to happen. Because again, there's been some government stuff from the Chinese government. They're like, this is what we're doing. But there's been a lot of kind of like, hey, what's the next step? What's the game plan? And met with a lot of radio silence. And so in a similar way with New Orleans, just like, when are the waters going to recede? When can I go back to my house? When will, you know, my school open up again? Things like that. That level of uncertainty is definitely similar. The one thing that I think is noticeably different about this one, and I would say for the worse, is there's kind of a level of mistrust and animosity present that wasn't present in New Orleans. And I think that with Katrina, it was just like, you know, this big disaster happened and then that was just it. And we were just trying to help people get back on their feet. Whereas with the virus, because it's spread person to person, because it's kind of sneaky to catch, there is this level of just like, you know, like I had a couple friends, not coworkers, but friends who, again, had gone back to their kind of small towns to go see their family for the spring festival. And they were telling me that some people had literally just gone and destroyed the roads into and out of towns. They're just like, we're farmers. We'll be able to survive. We have enough food to survive for the next couple months. No one is getting in. No one is getting out. You know, and then I know that back in the States, there's been kind of certain levels of kind of xenophobic hysteria of like, oh my God, what about this, that, and the other? And, you know, with quarantines from country to country and who can fly where. I think because the threat is still kind of out there and still happening and is in part tied to the people who are affected by it, are the ones who can also bring it, there's just kind of this understandable and somewhat natural level of just mistrust and wanting to of being anxious about it. Whereas with Katrina, it was very much just like, you don't have a house, you don't have food. Let me give you things to help you with that.
Right. So lastly, or second to last, I'm going to kind of open the floor after this, but
okay.
What are you most looking forward to once this part of your experience is over? Because I know, are you intending to stay in China? And what about daily life? Are you most looking forward to changing once this measure, once these measures are lifted?
What am I most looking forward to? Just being able to like go like one of the things that actually did help kind of my mental health. So basically, again, for those first few weeks, basically time was meaningless. Like nothing, there was no schedule, nothing was really happening. And so I just became nocturnal for like 2 weeks or so. Like I just go to bed at 3 p.m., wake up at, you know, whenever, and it was all good. And so, and then when the school opened up, so again, not for classes, but just like you can come in and go to your office and check your email and, you know, have access to stable internet, just having that was really, really helpful. Just like, oh, like this, like life is back, not to the full extent, but definitely more so. And so continuing back to that trend, like getting to see my students again, getting to walk around without pretending I'm in a surgery room the entire time. And just like enjoying it. Cause I will say that since it's starting to turn into spring here, I mean, there's like a lot of flowers blooming. There's a lot of, you know, trees opening up. There's a lot of parks in the city. And so just kind of getting to enjoy the beautiful parts of the city. So yeah, I'm definitely planning on staying in China. And I'm looking forward to just kind of getting back to the things that kind of drew me here and getting back to the things that were, interesting and exciting and worthwhile.
That's great. And those first couple of weeks, I mean, that sounds kind of dark, right? I mean,
yeah, somewhat literally. But then, yeah, it was because there was nothing to do but wait. Like you couldn't really see anyone. I know that some places were actually giving you like passes to where like, you can leave your apartment X times a week to go get food. And besides that, you have to stay in your apartment. And I know that in Wuhan itself, it was even worse. People were just legit, like, you cannot leave your room. And so thankfully that didn't happen in my apartment complex, but even then there was nowhere really to go. Like nothing was open. No one was allowed to meet. Again, you could only go really where you lived. And so, yeah, that was weird. That was not fun.
Well, I'm definitely glad it's improved since then.
Yeah.
Is there anything? Yeah.
Oh no, it's definitely picked up. You know, there's like more people walking around. There's more kind of things happening. It's funny, like restaurants aren't officially allowed to open, but you are allowed to get delivery from them. And so basically what's happening is people will like at dinner time, they'll just all go to the restaurant and just like order their food and they'll just like wait outside the door. And then just like, they're technically not going inside the restaurant. They're just grabbing their food. And so there's been a lot of kind of not funny, but funny interactions like that, where it's just like, okay. That's
society finds a way in like
yep.
This kind of, do you actually have any other examples of that kind of thing where in the context of the different legal restrictions, people have sort of gamed it socially?
I mean, just what passes for a gas mask has definitely been interesting. There's evidently been a couple people that have just gotten those, like, you know, those giant, like, inflatable Halloween costumes that, like, cover you head to foot, like the giant T-Rex yeah. costumes. People have been wearing those. There have been several cases where, like, I've been walking and, like, there's been someone, like, wearing a mask and, like, they'll start coughing and then they'll, like, take off their mask to cough and spit it out and then put the mask back on. It's like, that doesn't fix it. And I saw one where a guy had taken – that's interesting.
It certainly is. All right. I'm just going to open the floor to if there's anything else about your experience you want to share with Americans, anybody around the world, really, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, the general thing that seems to be working best here is like, just don't be stupid. You know, like obviously don't pretend like nothing is wrong. Like take extra precautions, but also don't go overboard with things that you don't necessarily know will help. Just, you know, simple things about like the washing your hands thing. Like I know it's kind of, you know, oh, you know, I didn't realize how much I touched my face and stuff like that. But little things like that do end up going a long way. Whereas, you know, bleaching everything in sight won't necessarily help make you any safer. It will just like make your kids' pants pink when they slide down the slide, you know? So yeah, I think that's the, you know, don't treat it like it's nothing, but also don't freak out. Just make good, simple, smart decisions about, you know, who you're spending time with and what you're doing. Like, you know, don't go out to like big group crowded places if you can help it. But again, don't be like afraid to set foot out of your house.
Thanks for tuning in to this Contagion Connect podcast. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And for the latest infectious disease news, be sure to check out contagionlive.com.